When Harold Bronson and Richard Fuss founded the Rhino Records label in the back room of their record store, their goal was just to make enough money so that they could avoid having to get a real job. It turned into what many have considered to be the best reissue label in the world. Harold Bronson has written about how the company was created and what made it great in the Rhino Records story, Revenge of the Music Nerds. It's published by Select Books, and I'm very pleased that it brings Harold Bronson to our show today. Hello.
Hello.
And we'll get to the story of the Monkees in a little while. We just heard the Monkees. The idea for a record label, as we said, was in this record store, which was called Rhino Records. Why that name?
Well, it's interesting. Years later, we attributed various qualities to it. But at the time, it was just the alliteration.
Rhino Records.
Right. Just worked.
And when did the store open?
Well, it's interestingly enough, but the book, which just recently came out, represents the 40th anniversary from when Rhino started. So the store opened the end of October in 1973.
Was it similar to other record stores? Or most of them sold pretty much everything, but I get the sense that this was more like the record store in the book and the movie High Fidelity.
It's very close to that. The main exception is... While some of our clerks could be condescending, they weren't anywhere close to having the attitude, at least in the movie. But it was used record stores were kind of new, and it sold mostly or a good percentage of used records because the markup on new records was very small. I mean, most items you think there's a 100% markup, meaning that the wholesale price is half of the retail price. But in records, that was a lot less, and it was hard to compete against the chains who had more favorable buying conditions.
Because they were buying in huge quantities.
Right. So while we did have new records, a lot of it was used, and also cutouts, which were deleted records that could be purchased much cheaper.
And did you have certain favorites that you would recommend if you thought you liked a customer?
Well, yeah, it was interesting. I remember prior to all of this, I went into a record store, and there was a large stack of records by an artist that I'd never heard of before. So I asked the clerk, and he said, oh, it was because they were getting marketing money from, in this case, RCA Records, and that's why they had those records there. And it kind of struck me because I thought that in a store environment, especially when you want to, build up your relationship with your customers, that you wanted to promote, in this case, records that you liked and that you thought were good, not nearly because marketing money exchanged hands.
It's kind of like a wine store. You don't want to say to somebody, buy this bottle of wine, which I don't like.
Right.
You want to recommend something you think they'll like and we'll bring them back to your store.
Right. So basically... quite often, we would recommend obscure records that we really believed in, and I think
such as. Have you any memories?
Well, I mean, there's certain that are really obscure, like Tommy Hone was on London Records, for instance, and then there were others like the Dictators, who were originally from New York, and
a lot
of people know who they were, but I don't really think they sold that well, and. Even the Ramones in the early days, I mean, they're such an institution, but in the early days, I think their albums only sold around 30,000 each.
Rhino Records was called the best damn record store in California by Coast Magazine. In fact, you had two successful branches as well. So wasn't that enough?
Well, they paid for themselves and they made a little profit, but you know, they weren't that profitable. But I think the record label, which was formed in the back room of the store, was because of my partner Richard and myself, our desire to express ourselves creatively. And growing up, hearing a lot of the great novelty records, listening to radio in the 50s and 60s, like Purple People Eater and Alan Sherman and a lot of the Stan Freberg, we really wanted to make those records. And I also wanted to produce and support the local music scene.
Well, an earlier version of this was Commodore Records, which came out of a record store, and they recorded some of the great classics of jazz. But you did mostly reissues.
Right. Well, as much as we liked recording new novelty records and we liked the concept of supporting the local music scene, ultimately those didn't sell that well. And from our first year, we were into reissues, and ultimately we could see that that was really what was going to pay the bills.
Did you and Richard have the same ideas about business, and were your musical tastes similar?
Well, there was definitely an overlap. I think he was, his specialty was more the 1950s. I was more the 1960s. But one of the things that made us successful was prior to us putting out records, the reissues were thought to be, let's just squeeze out some extra profits and let's just schlock this product out with putting out the least, spending the least amount of money. And our position was this music was important to us growing up and deserves to be heard in the best way that it could. So we put much more money into our product than the major labels did.
You say that you modeled Rhino Records after the Beatles label Apple.
Well, on one level, what I liked about Apple initially, there was a lot of optimism there, and there was an ad of that they ran in England of a man playing a one-man band, and they said basically this guy came in off the street and now he's a millionaire. Of course, it was, you know, facetious and wishful thinking, but, you know, like, send us your tapes. And I just thought, hey, I really like the idea that somebody could come in off the street with no connections, and if they were good, get a deal. And I actually made a deal with somebody who just came in off the street. So I think ultimately Apple was quality and at least initially the optimism.
Well, Apple signed James Taylor, and that record bombed. He did well when he went to another label. I mean, he finally did well when he went to another label.
Right.
So even with the Beatles behind you, you don't always do so well. My guest is Harold Bronson. His book, The Rhino Record Story, Revenge of the Music Nerds. What was your first release?
On Rhino?
Mm-hmm.
Well, the first single was Go to Rhino Records by Wildman Fisher. Now, Wildman Fisher was a very eccentric street singer who was, in a sense, discovered by Frank Zappa, who released a double album on him on his Bizarre Records. And when Wildman would come into our store, we treated him like almost like a rock star because we all had his album. Now, his album didn't sell very well when it came out, I think about 12,000 copies. So as appreciation for letting him hang out, sometimes we had to endure him all day.
He kind of shouted. He was an early rapper without being called a rapper.
That's a good way to look at it. So Go to Rhino Records, and that became our first record.
I seem to remember one of the Zappa things, Sally Go Round or something.
Merry Go Round is what you're thinking of.
Merry Go Round.
Boop, boop, boop.
Yeah. But you wound up putting out novelty songs and then finding old records that you liked that you thought other people might want to buy?
Yeah, I think, you know, the distillation of this is if you are really a passionate music fan, but you're not talented enough to make it as a performer, what do you do? How do you exercise this passion? And that kind of pervaded over it. And it was really important for us to make this music that had been neglected available.
You write that 1983's Big Daddy was an album that best defined a Rhino release.
Yes. Big Daddy were a 1950s group, but what they did was they rearranged contemporary songs in 1950s style. And we came up, we concocted the story about how they were on a USO tour of Southeast Asia and were held captive for 24 years. And when they came back and they were being debriefed, one of the officers felt sorry for him and got him some sheet music of some new songs to work up because they needed some new material. And they played them in the only style they knew how, which was 1950s. So it related
kind of
doo-wop. In some cases, yes. So it related to, it was very creative. There was a high quality in the production. And it also harkened back to the roots of rock and roll.
But then the Rhino officers were raided by the LAPD one day because you were also doing bootlegs?
Well, no, that wasn't the record label. That was a warehouse, and that was kind of an offshoot.
Oh, you were selling bootlegs.
That was an offshoot of the store where a couple times a year we had warehouse sales, and there were a number of bootlegs in there. But yeah, that had nothing to do with the label.
Well, when you do reissues, there's always the temptation, if there's an obscure source for a recording, to not spend a lot of time trying to track down who made the original record, because you're going to have to pay royalties, aren't you?
Well, I think we were always in favor of paying royalties. And, you know, if you appreciate the artist's music that you're putting out, you'd like to see them get paid. Unfortunately, in most of the cases, well, in some cases we could pay the artist direct. In other cases, we would pay a record label or a producer, and we hoped that the money got to the artist, but I don't think that that was always the case.
You made a distribution deal with Capitol Records. Because the big labels were the only way you could get into a lot of stores in those days?
Well, I think the problem was prior to that, we were with a series of independent distributors, and it was difficult to collect money sometimes from them. And I mean, I think there were some good people there, but there was some problems with that, and we just thought that Capital would not only help our cash flow, but that we would reach more retail outlets with their sales force.
Was it a good deal for you?
Yeah, it was definitely a good deal for us, and it was also a great deal for them.
Now, you had a huge hit with the Monkees. Had they already disbanded and been largely forgotten by the time you decided to re-release their first albums?
Yes. That was a case where they were originally on Cold Gems Records. And around the time I made a deal to reissue their product, they had one best of album out on Arista Records. Mm-hmm. And Arista didn't care to release their original albums. So I made a deal for that. And then in 1986, there was the Monkees revival because MTV was scheduling and playing the shows. So they sold extremely well for us.
Were you surprised by some of the records that sold and some of the records that didn't sell as well?
Oh, yeah, that's always surprising.
Like the Turtles didn't sell all that well, although now they're So Happy Together is being featured on an Xbox commercial.
Well, I mean, I love the Turtles' music, but no, their best of album or the greatest hits sold about 300,000.
Oh, it's okay.
Which was good.
And then the Village People sold well for you?
Yes. So it's a good example. Polygram owned the rights, and they didn't want to put out at the time a Best of the Village People, so they licensed it to us. And we did, I think it was 133,000, which is extremely well for us.
You also have started a video company.
Yes, Rhino Home Video, accidentally, but that was a struggle. But ultimately, the last few years that we were at the company, it turned around and did extremely well.
So you're in the film business as well?
It's kind of interesting. I mean, here's these two kids who had, with no connections at all, who had started out with this underfunded, schlubby record store. And, created this record label. And part of it was, nobody would nobody could tell us no. I mean, who was around to tell us no? There was, you know, no boss or anybody saying you can't do something. So we did all this other stuff. So it was like, okay, let's make films. And I'm not going to say it was easy to do, but there are a handful of Rhino films out there.
Now vinyl is making a kind of a comeback, at least with hipsters. Are you surprised to see that?
Well, it's been going on, and I'm happy that more and more people are buying vinyl, and that includes a lot of younger people. I don't know if they would even look upon themselves as hipsters, but a number, you know, 4 or 5 years ago, my son said that he wanted to buy a turntable. It had nothing to do with anything that I did, and he occasionally buys vinyl. But I like it because for me, vinyl sounds better.
Well, you couldn't have started Rhino Records today with the way the record business has gone, could you?
No, I would rather not have. But from the little that I could see, what's been happening with the record business, it suffers from lack of visionaries.
And what's happening with Rhino Records these days?
Well, Rhino Records still exists as part of the Warner Music Group. Obviously, with this climate, it's much different than it was when Richard and I were there.
Well, we're going to go out with one of the things that you reissued, Dick Dale and the Deltones, Miserloo.
Thank you.
And my great thanks to Harold Bronson. His latest book, The Rhino Records Story, Revenge of the Music Nerds, it is published by Select Books. It's been a pleasure having you on the show.
Thank you so much.
And let's go now to Dick Dale and the Deltones.